is a weekly podcast about growing, designing, and selling flowers, and I'm your host, Sarah Nayani. On today's episode, we get to have a chat with Jess Wesley from Curly Girl Gardens, all about her small business. She lives right up the street from me. She's a neighbor and friend, and I've loved getting to know her since we took the Floret workshop together in 2021. And so we've been getting together monthly ever since with our friend Margaret, who you might have heard on some earlier episodes. And we just chat about what's going on with our small businesses and just sort of catch up on the latest. It's also turned into friendship. So, you know, we catch up about our families and just everything that's going on. So it's been really nice to have that nearby. Jess is wonderful. Our conversation was really fun and funny, and I hope you guys will enjoy it. We chatted about, you know, the flowers that she grows, some experiments that she's been doing, some of her dried flowers that she presses and she creates into beautiful art, and then the types of flowers and art that she sells. So hope you will listen in for that. And I'm releasing this episode on Monday, May 9th, but I'm recording this little intro right now on Sunday, May 8th, and today is Mother's Day. So first, I just wanted to wish anyone who's a mom happy Mother's Day. And for anyone out there that has a bad relationship with their mom or whose mom has passed away or was trying to have children and is having a hard time, has had a miscarriage, anything like that, I just want to send you so much love and wrap my arms around you today and this week and always, and just let you know I see you. And I know this might be a hard holiday for you, so I hope that you're hanging in there. And today is a huge flower holiday, as you might imagine. So just the guest on this week, I know she's doing a pop-up this weekend and she had a bunch of Mother's Day sales. A lot of my friends that are in the flower world had major business this weekend. It's a huge floral holiday, and it was actually the biggest single day of the year for me last year for selling flowers. But I opted to take it off this year. So I left town. I skipped town and I'm feeling like a million bucks, I gotta say. I started this year, the flower year, with, there's a lot of planning that goes into flowers well before I sell any flowers. But the first day of my year where I was selling flowers was really on Valentine's Day. And then since then, I've been doing a lot of just like one-off deliveries in the city, but I also started 9 weeks of subscriptions at the beginning of March that just ended at the end of April, and I've had several events, so it's been a really, really busy couple months already. It's like only the beginning of May, and I'm pretty tired, and I have a lot more to go. Like, it hasn't even really kicked off yet. This is just kind of like the precursor season. So we're getting into the busy times, and I just thought it was a great time to take off for my birthday, which was on May 4th. Coincidentally, also got pretty sick this past week. So unfortunately, I spent most of my week off being sick, but I am recovered now. I'm feeling better. And my husband and I had rented a little Airbnb or like VRBO up in Leavenworth, which is about 2.5 hours outside of Seattle. So yeah, we packed our two dogs in the car on Thursday night and we drove up to the Leavenworth area. We had a little cabin in the woods. It was perfect. It was super small and we just cooked some meals and hung out. We did a little bit of like, not really hiking because it wasn't hard. It was just like these little trails in the forest. It was so beautiful. And so we just took our dogs there. And then we went to Lake Wenatchee and just walked in the state park with our dogs. And it's just a beautiful like river and lake there. And so it was really cool to come across some of the scenery and the mountain views in the background. And yeah, just not be doing flowers this weekend when I know everyone else is crushed with flowers. So for everyone who has a business that sold flowers this Mother's Day, congrats to you. Here's a huge pat on the back, and I hope you get, you know, a night this week or something to just take yourself out to dinner or take a night off and just relax a little bit, because it's busy season from here on out, I know, for all of us. So I was glad to have a chance to recharge, and I feel super spoiled that I got to do that for my birthday. But anyway, so a little update on things happening in the garden. We just pulled in from our weekend away, and Right down on the sidewalk when you pull up to our house, I've planted a bunch of dahlias down there. So I was taking my time getting them outdoors because it's been a really, really chilly spring and there hasn't been a lot of temperatures consistently above 50 degrees. So it took me until the end of April, beginning of May to actually get my dahlias in the ground. So I had them outside, hardening off or basically conditioning them to outdoor temperatures for a couple weeks. I was moving them in and outside and they were taking up our whole house. I have now moved most of those into the ground. So I've planted 4 beds with dahlias. I did between 8 and 10 dahlias in each bed depending on the size. And so the flower beds that I have on my driveway and sidewalk are about 7 feet long and about 2 feet wide. And so I kind of do off center, every other dahlias, and I'm trying to do about 4 to 5 on each side of the bed. And a lot of people organize them by like rainbow colors. I did not do that. I group them sort of together by color because there are certain ones, like a lot of white dahlias get really infested by insects. And so you don't necessarily want to interplant those with like bright color dahlias, and you might want similar colors together if you're collecting seeds or you're trying to breed dahlias. You might want to think about colors that way, but I plant mostly by height because last year I tried to plant by color and I had a really hard time because some of my dahlias got shaded out by the other ones or they were growing at different rates. And I find it's a little bit a game of Tetris of planting all my dahlias because I had some that I took from cuttings, some that were rooted dahlias that I actually potted up inside my house and they grew into plants and they were like a couple feet tall by the time I put them outside. And then I have some that are just still in the tuber form because I ordered them through the mail. I lost a lot of my tubers, unfortunately, from last year due to mold. And so I had to order a bunch of new ones in. So those ones were all coming at different times. And some of them came just last week. So I haven't gotten all of them into the ground yet, but I got 4 beds planted and I have another bed that I want to put in. I just have to get something else out in order to put those in. So I'm going to pot the remaining tubers I have up and just get them going inside and give me a few more weeks to make room for those to go outside. And then I have a couple beds of foxgloves that have started putting on new leaves. They're not very big yet, but hopefully those will be blooming in a month or two. And then I've got Iceland poppies that I started from seed that are outside and they're doing really well. You're starting to be able to see those little hairy buds, coming up from the center of the plant. I had some Calibri poppies that I got from Farmer Bailey's as plugs, and I planted those back in December, and they are just in full bloom right now. So I'm excited to include those in my subscriptions starting this week. They've been really on the short side for the first few stems from each plant, but now the stems are getting much longer, so I can include those in bouquets that I typically do. Those are I need stems that are at least 12 inches for my bouquets that I sell in subscriptions. And then in the backyard, I have irises that are starting to bloom. There's a few that are just opening. They're beautiful. I can't wait because I have so many. And I also have sweet peas that are starting to run up the trellises that I have. None of them are blooming yet, but I'm hoping in the next few weeks they will start. My ranunculus were really late this year, so I think it's been pretty unseasonably cold this spring. I think it was one of the colder springs on record in recent years, if I have that right. And my ranunculus started about a month earlier last year, and so they were almost finishing up by this time last year, and mine are just starting to bud up and bloom right now. So I'll be including ranunculus and then butterfly ranunculus in subscriptions this week, which I'm excited about. And yeah, just we have some anemones starting as well. Those are also behind. I had one flush that's already done, and then the next bed is going. So it's just an exciting time, a lot happening. I've got some snapdragon seedlings that I put out a while ago, and they're starting to, get new layers of leaves, get some height on there. I love this time of year. There's so much possibility. And then we also have a big lilac tree that's blooming in the backyard right now. So hoping to include some lilacs for subscribers. And even if you don't live in Seattle, I'm just explaining this because I think it's kind of cool to document like what's going on and what things are blooming at the same time. And I also think it's a weird year weather-wise, so I love to like track some combinations that I wouldn't have thought of before. Like certain things are just coming into bloom and they're later than normal. So it's creating some really fun like spring combos of, you know, plants that I wouldn't have put together in prior years. So we'll get right over to the interview next. But if this is your first time tuning in, I just wanted to let you know the general setup of this podcast is that I usually start with an intro and just update on things that are going on with my garden or flower business that week. And then I go to an interview with a flower friend or a flower related guest. And then at the end, I do an outro where I try to give a flower fact any week that I remember to. And then I do a song of the week, which is just a song to listen to while you're out driving or doing something flower related. And then this week, I also wanted to recommend some podcasts that I love, whether you're looking for garden content or just some other really interesting podcasts to listen into. So I thought it would be fun to share some of my favorites and then hear from you guys if you have some favorites, because I'm always looking for hand-free content that I can do while I'm washing flower buckets and gardening and you know, watering my plants and just things that I can do without having to sit down in front of a computer. It's kind of nice to just have something going in my ears. So hang in to the end for all that, and we'll be right back with the interview. All right, today I'm so excited to welcome Jess Wesley from Curly Girl Gardens. Hi, Jess. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sarah.
Thanks for joining today.
Thanks for having me. I am super excited to do this. I have never done a podcast before, but yeah, I've always wanted to. So, and I'm glad my first one can be with my flower friend.
Yay! I know. I was saying in an earlier episode that talking, chatting with you and Margaret has just been such the best experience for me getting into this new field in my life, a new stage in my life. And so thank you so much for the great convos. And I hope we can like record a few of them so people can listen in.
Yeah, totally. And same. It's like, I mean, I shared something on Instagram the other day that just, it's been, it's made the experience for me just so much better to share it with you and Margaret and like get to talk about it and completely nerd out about flowers with other people who care.
Yes.
And not just because they care about me, like my husband and son, but like love flowers the way
love
I do.
Love flowers. And they get it. Exactly. Totally. Well, we have our high priestess of the podcast, Erin Benzikane, to thank for that, because we took the Floret workshop together.
Yes. So yes, I know.
Floret for bringing us together.
And like, I was just so excited when I saw him, like, there, she's in Ballard? Wait, she's in Ballard too? Like, yay.
Yeah. The origin story is that Jess reached out to myself and then Margaret from Ballard Urban Flowers and set up a meetup. That was our first one. And then we decided to have them monthly since. So it's been a pretty great little crew. And I feel like we each have some other flower friends. And so we need to bring them into the folds to our meetup sometimes.
Totally. Yeah, I agree.
Well, first, tell us a little bit about your business.
So my business is Curly Girl Gardens. And during the growing season, I sell upcycled mason jar floral arrangements, seasonal subscriptions for individuals and businesses in Northwest Seattle. So very hyper locally focused. And I also offer ornamental container design services to my business clients specifically.
That's awesome. So basically something that might be like on their front door, things like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like entranceway containers. And then I actually switch gears completely in late fall. And I create pressed flower art and everlasting floral decor that I sell at local artisan markets around the city.
Those are beautiful. And don't you use some of your dried flowers for your tags for floral arrangements too?
I do. Yeah. So I use my pressed flowers for both cards that like around holidays I'll sell with the arrangements, and I make pressed flower tags. Yeah. That I can, it's an option on my arrangements. Like if people want to include a little message, like specifically for Mother's Day, those were really popular which reminds me I need to get making some of those.
Because you ran out from your Mother's Day.
Yeah, because I ran out around Christmas. They were super popular too. So I need to build my stock back up of those. And I'm also kind of navigating how to do prints of things for both like my artwork as well as for cards and tags. So I can, you know, do a few designs and have them available. So
tell us a little bit about the customers that you sell to. You said it was hyper local in Ballard. What kinds of people or how are you, what forums are you selling through?
Yeah. So I really like, organic connection and getting to know my neighbors, and it helps me feel very grounded. And so the way that I like to sell my products is really to just connect with other people in the neighborhood who love flowers, whether or not that's they love growing them in their garden or that they just like having them in their homes. So a lot of the way that I get a lot of my customers is through like, sometimes when I'm gardening, like people will walk by and I'll talk to them or give them a card. And sometimes, I do basically the online equivalent of that, I think, which is in the My Ballard Facebook group. They have weekend business postings, that I'll share there, but I'm also an active member of that group. Like I don't just business posts, like I'll comment on other people's things and things like that as well. And I do the same with a couple of other Facebook groups, one that's for moms in Northwest Seattle, and things like that. And I've actually gotten a lot of my sales that way, not so much through like posting directly on my page or ads or anything like that, but from posting pictures of what I do and things in these groups and just talking to others about them. I have a gardening group on Facebook that I'll post things to as well. And that people will be like, oh, how do you have that coming up so early? And so like, I'll share some kind of information about what I do with other gardeners that are, you know, home gardeners that do this for fun. And, you know, but then I'll also get some sales and things that way too. So
it's like genuine connection with your community and people who love flowers, and also just through connecting with other small businesses and other people that appreciate this, it just leads to the.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, and like one of my business clients, is someone else who is doing business posts on my Ballard group. She's a local hairstylist. And like, she would always like my stuff and I would always like hers. So I just sent her a message and I'm like, hey, do you want to get a coffee and talk about how we might be able to partner? And now I bring her a sweet little mini arrangement for her tiny salon space once a week and, you know, share stuff about how awesome her color is, her hair coloring is, because she does these awesome, like really bright things that are pretty great. And, you know, share when she posts things with her, with the flowers. Especially as it like compliments people's hair color. I love that.
Well, and Curly Girl Gardens. I mean, you've got, she's picked the perfect floral design for her business. So tell us a little bit about your garden setup. So you sell most of the flowers that you sell, you grow yourself. And so can you tell us a little bit about what your garden looks like?
Yeah. So I try to sell primarily what I grow myself. Like you said, I don't really bring in a lot from the wholesale, and I actually find it fun to kind of go around my garden and be like, okay, what can I put in this arrangement that'll make the flowers I do have look really cool? Yeah. I have definitely used interesting looking weeds before or things before.
Heck yeah. If a weed can be used, let's use it.
But like I didn't, well, I mean, a weed is just something growing where you don't want it to, right? Like,
yeah, two birds, one stone.
Exactly. And, I have neighbors that I have permission to like forage from and stuff. And like, I definitely started using the neighbor's fennel before I actually knew what it was, but it just looked cool and fuzzy and smelled like licorice. Anyway, my particular garden space, our home is a remodeled Craftsman on a 5,000 square foot lot. We do live in Seattle proper in the city, but in Ballard, which has a little bit more space. And we do have a 5-year-old son. So our backyard is reserved as his outdoor play space primarily. I have taken over some of the border, but mostly it's for him to play in.
The garden creep. The lawn gets smaller.
I mean, as he gets older, it's going to happen, but right now it's his still.
Yes.
So I grow most of the flowers that I sell in my front yard. And so out in my front yard, I have 3 simple 4x8 raised beds. And I have a 4x4 and a 2x6, and they're arranged in a way to really make the most of our front yard space with, I think there are just 18-inch paths or maybe 2 feet. I think 2 feet paths in between. And then, so the yard is elevated above the sidewalk with the 3-foot retaining wall. And there are pre-existing border beds at the front of that elevated yard and kind of around near the house. And those were there from when we moved in, and I'm slowly building a collection of flowering perennials that can do double duty as like looking really pretty with the house, as well as providing cutting material. They're also like my throw-in space. Like I don't have enough room for this in an actual garden bed, so I'm just going to throw it here. This gets full sun and drains well. Let's see how it does, which is kind of my approach to gardening just in general. And then I've also converted the narrow strip in front of the retaining wall from being just weed-ridden grass into planting space. I did that last season. And I use that mostly for perennial flowering bulbs and also some kind of experimental space there. It's where I'm putting those Lizzies that I ordered, the ones that didn't fit in the bed. And then I also have 2 2x4 raised beds and blueberry bushes in containers in the parking strip, which, as you know, in Seattle, like that parking strip gardening is like super, super common. So I definitely use that space as well. So yeah, I basically have like a smattering of beds kind of around my front yard, as well as border space. And I grow everything there.
With your setup being in your front yard, it's also good because you're so good at talking to your neighbors, like you mentioned. And I bet a lot of people are stopping and talk as they walk by and see all the flowers you're growing.
Yeah, it's actually, it kind of saved my sanity that way during the, like the most intense and challenging parts of the pandemic, where, you know, throughout it all, outdoor conversations with distance were fairly low risk. So it meant that like I could engage with my neighbors in a safe way while I was outside. And I actually feel like I got to know more people during the pandemic than I did before, because I was spending so much of my time out there gardening. And I like that. I like being able to kind of connect with people and talk to them about my flowers as they're walking by.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Lysianthus just a second ago, and you're one of the few people I know that has successfully started growing Lysianthus from seed. And so we ordered in some plugs, a group of us here in Ballard from Farmer Bailey's. And that seems to be a way that many of the growers get their Lysianthus, but a harder task is to grow it from seed yourself. And I was wondering if we could ask you a few questions about that today. So where did you source your seeds from?
Yeah. So I got my seeds from Redemption Seed Company, and they were EcoMix Group 1 Lysianthus. And this was actually my first season using Redemption Seeds as a source. I got a few other things from them, like some really cool flowering perennials and stuff too. And their germination rates have just all around been like really, really great. So I've really been happy with them, and I plan to use them as a primary source more going forward because of that.
Good. I checked them out after you recommended them, and they have such good options for, I was looking at their Larkspur in particular. I've ordered some of that. I'm super excited.
They have some really interesting selections that I don't see in other places too. And I really liked how they kind of described everything, and like, yeah, I've just been really happy with them. They also are pretty good about like, if you comment on like Instagram and like I shared something about their germination and they like reached out to me, they're like small enough to kind of have that, that again, like that sense of connection of like, I feel like if I had an issue with their seeds, like I could just message them and talk to them about it. Like I would with you. So I appreciate that as well.
Okay, so when did you start your seeds, Jess?
So I started them on January 11th.
Okay, and you already have nice little seedlings that are about the same size as the plugs that we ordered in, which it's wild.
Yeah, I do. So I did want to share just something about kind of my general approach that I think helps. Which is, I mean, as you know, I didn't start gardening at all, had not grown a thing until 2019. So for me, anytime I grow a new variety or a new type of flower at all, it's all an experiment. And so I think I expect my rate of failure to be fairly high, which means that the idea of taking on something challenging that tends to have a high failure rate, I'm like, well, that's just like anything. So I'll give it a go. So I think I'm like more chill about it than, you know, folks that have like been doing this for years and like have a well-founded high expectation of success.
Yes.
I'm just like, well, I'll give this shit a go and see if it works.
Yes.
Fine.
That's what I love about you. You try things. And I think that's really important.
Thank you. For me, that's part of the fun of it, you know?
Yes.
And this is kind of a sidetrack. So if you need to edit it out, that's fine.
No, no.
But so I actually, like when I started gardening, I started it as at the recommendation of my therapist, actually, as part of a way to manage a lifelong struggle with generalized anxiety disorder. And so it was, she was like, she strongly encouraged me to take up something that I could do with my hands that didn't involve a screen.
Yes.
And I decided to start gardening when we moved into this house in 2019. And I finally had front, like I had yard space. I had green space for the first time in my life, which I think is like, you know, a common story, I think, for like folks, especially in our generation, that like, it's not until we finally like have or rent a house, like, you know, in our 30s that we finally have that experience, like after our childhood.
Yeah, because you're living in a city, or a lot of people are when they're younger.
Yeah, especially here in Seattle, you know, like we were in apartments and then a townhome. So anyway, I finally had that green space and decided I'd give gardening a go. And so I think for me, like a lot of the comfort I find with it is in kind of that you can only have so much control.
Yes.
Like you can do things, you can grow these beautiful flowers, but ultimately if Mother Nature decides that there's going to be a windstorm or just that like those seeds are not happy where they are, it's not going to happen. And there is nothing you can do. And I think it kind of helped me apply those lessons to the rest of my life, that like, it's okay to acknowledge that like, I can't control everything.
Yes.
Bad stuff is going to happen, but there's also going to be beauty. Like there will be some flowers, you know?
Absolutely. And I think that's such an important lesson, because most of us get into growing because it is therapeutic. And there's something so magical about seeing this tiny little seed grow into this big, beautiful plant. Aww. And you're right. It doesn't always work out. And I feel like a lot of times people don't talk about that aspect, but taking some of the pressure off, if you can, like obviously we're growing in our home spaces. And if we need to, with our two business models, we could buy in from somewhere else. And so for me, that's helped take pressure off so I can have more fun in the garden, which it sounds like,
you know, or buy in from each other. Or Margaret.
Yeah. Or buy it from each other. Yes.
Exactly. Or our philosophy of like, I can't grow it. Margaret?
Yes.
Margaret, do you have it?
hers will have succeeded if ours failed most of the time.
I mean, I also love though that somehow like that also we kind of trade off in that like I take on more experiments. So sometimes the stuff I do does work when like she's babying them and it doesn't. And it was like this one like random chance thing that just happened to work out, you know?
Yes.
So I feel like we can kind of learn from each other and our different personalities and approaches that way, which is just one of the many things that are wonderful. But anyway, I got into this just because I feel like with Lysianthus, like there is a whole Facebook group where people are like every day, multiple posts about like, are they big enough? Like, did I do this right? Like, and doing things like, you know, when exactly to remove them from a heat mat, which I never did at all. And like, even adding some like peroxide or something, like there's,
Wow.
I don't know the details of what they did because I just read it and I was like, what?
Yeah. So you took a more just natural approach to it and hey, it works. So maybe people need to stop babying them so much.
Right. And I feel like sometimes the things that you like really focus on and you're like, these need to work. Like the more pressure, at least with me in my life in general, I find that the more pressure I put on something, kind of the least effective it is. Like it's less effective the more pressure I put on something.
And it's less fun. We
Absolutely.
want to have fun.
Right. Like that's the whole reason I did this, like. So anyway, so one thing I did decide to do that was different with Lisianthus and some of my other seeds was actually just centered around my own laziness. I knew that they were going to have to be under those grow lights for like the long haul. So instead of starting them in like the 128 cell equivalent, I just put them directly into the 72 size.
Okay, that's great. So a little bit bigger.
A little bit bigger just because I tend to wait until the last minute to pot things up. Like
Yes.
if the roots are sticking out the bottom and they're starting to get a little wilty, then I'm like, oh damn, I've got to pot those up today.
It's time to
Like,
move them.
and I mean, again, this is part of accepting my reality is like life is a working mom with her own business. Like it means that I need to prioritize. And once they're like wilting for help, then I'll do it. So I didn't want that to happen with the Lisianthus. So I'm like, I'm just going to be kind to my future self and put them in the bigger
Start
ones.
them
Right.
bigger.
So that way, like they can just sit there. So yeah, that's one of the things that I did a little bit differently.
So you just did like a normal seed starting soil in 72 tray and then.
Yeah. I wanted to get like a really good seed starting mix for like kind of for investing in my business this year. So like previously I'd just done like whatever I could find at like Swanson's or whatever else, prioritized organic, but other than that, like just a standard sterile seed starting mix. And then I was like, okay, this year, like I'm gonna go and get some of like the ProMix stuff. But as you know, there were so many shipping difficulties and backlogs that it was like impossible to get. So I actually wound up doing the same thing I'd done previously and just picked up some EB Stone Organics seed starting mix from Swanson's. And that has worked fine for me. I don't like that it gets crusty on top, but I was like, okay, it's fine. I know how to manage that. So I just used that. And then the seeds I had were pelleted a nice bright yellow, which hopefully made them really easy to see against the seed starting mix. But they are super, super tiny. Like, so even with the pellets on them, they're not much bigger than snapdragon seeds. I just use my bare hands to put them on top of the soil. Like even with really good, well-fitting gloves, it was not going to work. So I just used my bare hands for it. I think the experience that I have handling dried flower petals helps me feel pretty comfortable with that sort of thing. I know some folks are not, and there are like tricks that people do with not toothpicks, chopsticks, and things like that. I guess you could probably use a toothpick too if you wanted to. But what I did was I placed them with my bare hands, just one or two in each cell, and then I pressed it lightly, actually using the point of the plant label just to make sure it had really good contact with the soil. And then I just sprinkled a really small bit of fine vermiculite on the top. But the important thing was I did make sure that I could still see the bright yellow of the seed balls since Lisianthus do need light to germinate. I very lightly misted the surface, and then I bottom watered, and left them in the bottom water for about an hour. Then I covered with a humidity dome that had a built-in vent and put it on my heat mat set to 70 under my grow lights
Okay.
and hope for the best.
Sounds great. And what did you find when it?
So, what I found was they didn't all germinate at the same time, but the first ones came up on January 20th, so just 9 days, and it says 10 to 14 is typical. So I think that there were conditions that they did like about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I did have almost all of them germinated eventually, though I did have some cells where like two of the seeds sprouted and then some where there were none. So I had to do some careful transplanting, Which also I kind of go back to my skills as a tried flower artist to very carefully maneuver them out. But it worked, and they took to being transplanted that young, like no problem. I'm suspicious that some of the inconsistency I had there though is because I reused my cell packs from last year. And because I grow a great variety of flowers and not that many of each type, I use packs of either 6 72 size or 12 128 size. And some of the bottoms had gotten pushed up because sometimes during the growing season, if I haven't stored them so carefully, my son takes them and plays with them.
great toy, you know?
Right?
Get him into gardening young.
Yeah, no, and I do. I absolutely do. But him playing with those and getting them all squishy, not my favorite. And I'll admit some of the squishiness is probably from me struggling to get things out and just being like, but what that means that I didn't really think about is that then the bottom, when I bottom water, it means that when I put like half an inch in, it might not reach some of those that are squished. So I think that was some of the inconsistency. I did also, because again, I want to share stories that like even something that was really successful that I grew the number I wanted to, that you do have some failures. And I think it has nothing to do with Lysianthus being hard, but just with like any setup, like some stuff isn't going to work. I did have a couple burn out under my lights. And I realized like I was using this year, I was really trying to use as much of my seed starting shelf space as possible. And so I pushed stuff really far back towards my south facing window. And as you know, where my yard is situated, I get like a lot of sun. Yes. Compared to like most of the neighborhood, even like my yard, when I go to visit you guys and then come here, is like always
sunny
and a little bit warmer. Yep. And I didn't realize, but it was getting really hot by the window. And so I finally put my like heat mat thermometer in there. And I was like, oh, that's like a good, I think it was a good 5 degrees or so warmer than somewhere else. Like after I saw one burnout. So I just like scooted it away a little bit from the window. And I've tried to be on like when it's decent weather outside, like not freezing cold, I'll like try to open the window just a little bit to like get some cooler airflow in. And I think that helped with, I only had two of them burn out. And I've also noticed that like, I think with my lights, I just can't have anything that like people say, put it 2 inches above the plant. Like that is just too close for the type of, I have LED grow lights and I think that's just too close. So I actually wind up keeping them even when they're small, more like 4 inches. And that seems to be a sweet spot.
Oh, that's really good advice too. Yeah. I think it depends on the lights that you have. So it's important to think about and just sort of test out by what you're seeing in the tray. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Lysianthus, just to be clear, like that wasn't like, they weren't the only things that burned out. Like, so that's why it's like, the issues that I have, like, weren't about the Lysianthus being challenging so much as it was just like what my seed starting setup is like this year. And just kind of navigating the problems of that. It was kind of all the same as any other seeds I've ever grown, honestly.
Well, that's great. So we just need to think of it like a normal seed, plug it in, try it out. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, you know, you can either wait till next season to grow them or have some plugs as a backup. So yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to share about the Lysies is I did find that the rosettes grew to a range of different sizes. And I don't know why, honestly, it didn't have anything to do with where they were under the lights. They just grew to a range of different sizes.
Okay. So Jess, you are also what I consider to be a little bit of a cosmos queen.
I love that title so much. I hope one day to be worthy of it. I love it.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you love about cosmos.
Yeah. So cosmos will always have a special place in my heart. They're very easy, happy flowers. And my special relationship with them is they are the first thing I ever grew. So like I said, I first started gardening in 2019 when we moved into this house. And I had these, like the front border is like really thin and they had just put in these boxwoods, like little mini boxwoods, that I learned from Googling what they were. And also learned that they don't like full sun. And I have a yard that gets southwestern sunlight. So that was too much for them. And that was why they were burning out. So I decided I just started taking them out because they look gross. And I'd rather have nothing there. And I was like, well, what am I going to plant there? And I had no idea. Like, I didn't know anything about soil quality. My mother-in-law is an avid gardener. And so I was like talking to her about what I could plant. And she's like, well, it gets a lot of sun, like maybe some flowers or something like that. She's like, just, you know, kind of encouraged me to just try something. And then we were at the hardware store for one of kind of our first trips for setting up the house, our local Stoneway Hardware here in Ballard. And I saw they had one of those displays of seeds. And I saw these cosmos a gorgeous white flowers with pink borders. And I really didn't know that flowers could have two colors. what is this? Like, I never even liked to get flowers. I am not someone, my family didn't really garden. Like, I don't have much experience with it as a kid, but then I just saw these and I'm like, that is so pretty. Like, I don't see those in bouquets anywhere. And then I picked them up and I read the packet. I'm like, okay, I need to make sure, if I'm going to try these, they need to be really easy. And I saw the words thrive on neglect. I was like, yes!
Score. We love neglect.
My kind of flower. And that they weren't picky about soil, pretty much just don't water them too much. And they're chill. And I'm like, great. So I took I followed the instructions meticulously. I must have read them five times. But I planted them just all across that border, just all the way down. I used every single seed in the packet. And they came up and they did everything they should, and they've got these buds and they turned into these gorgeous flowers that I was getting compliments on when they finally bloomed, which wasn't until October, which I can explain a little later on. But once they finally bloomed, I was just like, this is gorgeous. Required just a little bit of effort from me, but it was just I knew I was just helping Mother Nature along, you know? And it was so cool that with this little bit of work in the soil, I had brought more flowers into the world and had these gorgeous pink and white flowers in front of my all white house that people were complimenting me on, and that I got to talk to neighbors about what I was doing and learn more from them. And it just kind of so that's why they are so special to me, is because they were my easy first flower babies.
Yes. And what varieties are you planning to grow this year?
Yeah. So I am actually mostly going to grow plants from my previous growing season save seed. So I actually have saved seeds in the generation since those very first 2019 Cosmos Candy Stripe. But they've been collected from plants with a variety of different phenotypes. And I've tried to I have one that's just general open pollinated, from my Cosmos, let's grab bag and let's see what I get. But I have tried to separate some of them by these were dark pink later blooming. These were classic candy stripe. And these were a really my really exciting mutated ones.
Those are the best ones.
Yeah. So these were the ones that came up this past year that it basically took so the candy stripe variety is white with this fuchsia border on the outside. Right. And the ones that I had, it's they took someone took a watercolor brush and just spread that pink onto the petal. And it's just, I love it so much. I've saved seed from those and I have those separated out that I'm really hoping come back through this year. Because I didn't try to isolate them. And so it could be that I get something completely new. But like I said, it'll be a beautiful flower, so it'll be fine either way. So I'm doing that, but I also am going to grow, double click snow puff, Senia, I think is how you say it. I've never pronounced it out loud. But it's a relatively new variety that's kind of has a pink with a golden glow.
Ooh, sunset colors.
Yeah, it looks super pretty. So I'm really excited to see how that one. And those two are new to me this season. And I'm growing Summer Dreams, which is a variety. It's kind of similar to Candy Stripe that I grew for the first time last year. And so I'm really excited with this group that I'll have growing to actually see what that grab bag of mutations looks like in 2023.
Yes, next year will be cool with the combos.
Yes, I am super stoked because I just feel like this mix this year could produce some really pretty babies.
Awesome. And for Cosmos, are you starting them inside or do you direct seed?
So Cosmos are photoperiod sensitive, which means they're sensitive to the amount of daylight. They're a short day plant, so they bloom best with 14 hours of daylight or less. So in my experience here in Seattle with our long summer days, that means if I want my first succession to flower in June, I need to start them indoors right around now. It's actually on my calendar for like this week or next couple days. And that means late March.
Boop. Hey guys, it's Sarah with the Side Notes again. I just wanted to cut in and say, yes, I recorded this interview with Jess back at the end of March, and it is just coming out in May. So some of the info in this episode may not be exactly applicable to right now, but it is not too late to plant Cosmos. I actually haven't started any of my Cosmos seeds yet on May 8th. So don't worry if you haven't started yours yet, you can still plant them. And just an insider's note on this podcast is that I like to record a lot of my interviews ahead of time so that I can set up the season in a way that makes sense, so I know who the universe of guests are, and mostly because it's a really busy time of year for flower growers, and so I like to head that off by interviewing them a little bit earlier in the season when things aren't as crazy. But I always record the intro and the outro the day before I release the episode to try to keep things really on track with what season we're in. So if you're listening to this in May, hopefully the intro and outro will make sense for you, and just know that the interview was recorded a little bit in advance. Maybe that's TMI, but I love to know how things are made and thought you might too. Okay, now back to Jess. Boop.
So that they've set buds and have started to open before, like right around that longest day of the year. Otherwise they'll take longer to develop the buds and then they won't open till later, which is like I was talking about with my first year, growing them before I had any clue what photo period meant. I had planted them right around Memorial Day. And so that meant that it took them longer to kind of get going and develop buds, and they didn't really bloom until the days had shortened again in October. So I plant them the first succession indoors around now, like I said, and last year I had my first one open on June 22nd. So right around the solstice. And then I direct sow another succession after our last frost date. And those typically start flowering later, most of them not until like September-ish. And so the first ones are still going them too, because Cosmos are just amazingly productive. And as long as you keep cutting them, they will keep blooming and blooming. But I like to have like about a batch of fresh plants that start producing in the fall so they can keep going right through Thanksgiving. And that first season that they bloom so late, one advantage of planting them that late, and I might actually try doing a very late succession again because of this, is I had some blooming on New Year's Day.
Wow.
I had some that I planted real close to the house, like in my southwestern facing front yard. And I had some that I had on display with my Christmas decorations. And then the last one I cut on New Year's Day.
Wow, Jess, I think you've cracked a new code for Cosmos. That's amazing.
Again, it's really, I just take, and this was like, you know, when I, like I said, my first year, I just threw them in and it was like, it just happened to work.
Well, I hope people will go check out your Cosmos on your page. And I bought some from you this past year. Cause they're really beautiful. I grew some, but they just weren't loving the condition. So they weren't as productive as I wanted. I definitely got more later in the season, like you're mentioning, around September and into October. But yeah, the plants can get pretty, scraggly. And so at a certain point of the year, I just pulled them up and gave up on that space and put tulips in instead. But I'm hoping to be able to buy some from you again this year because I'm not dedicating a ton of space to cosmos.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Of course. I did also have some packages of my saved like open pollinated seeds that I'm going to share with like some of my subscribers or friends who are interested in just growing and seeing what happens. And I am also going to try to experiment with some isolation and hand pollination, especially if I get some of the watercolor ones to come back true, because I would love to try to establish that as a variety.
Yes.
Which I am just, again, it's just experiments and reading stuff and seeing how it goes.
It'll be the Curly Girl Gardens cosmos.
Yeah. So I'm just going to see what happens, but I'm hoping that some other people want to grow them too, so I can have some more like observations as well. So if you want a packet, let me know. You can still buy them from me though. That's totally fun.
And are cosmos one of the flowers that you press? Do they work well for dried flowers?
Oh man. Yes. Yes, they do. They work so well. So I've observed that in the same mix, later in the season, like from candy stripes, some of them might be more white and some of them might be completely dark pink. And, towards later in the season, it tends to be more of the darker colored flowers. And those, especially like the ones that are kind of all that real deep fuchsia color, like those just look stunning. And that the ones that kind of have the watercolor look to them that are like definitely an even, like not an even distribution, but a balanced amount of pink and white go really well, look really well pressed. Ones that have a lot more white on them, I just don't like how pure white tends to look when it's dry. But yeah, I like the ones that have that blend and the ones that are that solid jewel color. It just looks great. And those jewel colored cosmos are also just late season arrangements with jewel colored cosmos and dahlias are just
beautiful.
I love it. I love it.
Well, and speaking of dried flowers, you just showed me a photo recently of like a purple and white. I think it was an anemone. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
tell me a little bit about like some of the flowers that you dry and.
Yeah. So that anemone, I think one of the reasons that that white worked particularly well is because I think since anemones are such a cold hardy flower, their petals are a little bit thicker than like, I mean, a cosmos petal is like super, super thin. So like when you try to press them, they can either get like, you can see kind of any discoloration very easily. Whereas like I feel like the thicker petal like holds up better, to pressing. I use something called a microflare press, which allows me to, press flowers in the microwave.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's super cool. Another gift for my mom.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah. It's a really fun tool. You have to really experiment to get the timing right with your particular microwave. And it's different for all different flowers. Cause like I said, they have different thicknesses. They hold a different level of moisture. But that one in particular, I think that like my timing in the microwave of about a minute worked really well. And just like the purple just came up and was so bright and pretty. So my favorite ones to press are definitely like the brighter colored ones. And hold on one second. There is a squirrel digging up my seeds.
Oh no. Hey, it's Sarah with the side notes again. And I'm leaving this in because it made me laugh so much. Your dog is amazing.
Did you hear what I did? Yeah, I mean, are you going to leave some of that in? Because that's pretty cool. Funny.
I'm like, we got to put that like at the end, like bloopers. Go get that squirrel. That is so good.
I do put my dog to work that way. Like he's a rat terrier. It's basically a rat. Good dog. Yeah.
You've got a good team over there. You got to employ every member of your family.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's awesome.
I mean, I do need to replant those seeds still because it really went to town. Oh, it's fine. I mean, I'm glad that he got him, got the squirrel away. That was pretty awesome. That, good boy.
Oh, good yeah. job, buddy.
That's hilarious.
I know. I got to like rest my face.
I had a feeling the problem with us was going to be we just laughed.
I know. I don't think that's a problem, though. I think that's amazing.
You're right. It is amazing. It's true.
Squirrel props.
All right. Dried flowers.
All right. So what are some other flowers that you like to dry? Besides, so far we talked about cosmos and anemones, but what are some other flowers you like to dry?
Yeah. So consistent with my approach, I try everything. I will say that it can be a lot harder to dry the ones that have like those big centers, you know, like for the anemones, I think I actually like picked out some of that like big black kind of chunky bits from it. I wanted to see how like the little, like, you know how some of them have like in the white and purple ones, they have those little pretty purple sprays.
Yes.
I wanted to see how some of those dried. I'm in drying them separately. They kind of look like glitter. So I might incorporate them into like some other art later in the year. But some of my favorites include pansies and violas. They're just like so nice and flat and like so bright. Again, like I really love like the bright and happy open face flowers like for everything. And they are obviously, they lend themselves really well to pressing. But interestingly, dahlias can be very... can look pretty amazing pressed.
Wow. So how do you do that if it's like such a dense flower?
Yeah. So what I do is actually take some of the petals right in the center that are really close together and also like really chunky and just take them out.
Okay.
Because then when you squish it, the petals kind of spiral anyway and it doesn't look blank. But taking it out, the centers of flowers, the places where they're connected, like to their leaves and stem, always is like the last to dry, whether you're slow pressing it or pressing it in the microwave. And I think one of the things that's good about dahlias is that the petals hold moisture fairly well. So that inside bit, there's not as big of a time difference as in some of them that are like really thin petals with really thick centers. Like I'm thinking like Rudbeckias, for example, I've never had good luck with because their center is so meaty, but the outside is so thin, whereas dahlias are a bit more balanced, just moisture retention wise. So they press really nicely in the microwave press. And I find that if I do have the issue where the petals are dry and the center just isn't quite, I will stop the microwave pressing and put it just in a traditional, like I use watercolor paper under a piece of cardboard for a little bit of ventilation and books.
Okay.
And that's it. So like I'll start it in the microwave, get it kind of most of the way there. Then if there's that little annoying bit of moisture in the center that might mold, I put it in just a traditional homemade press.
And if someone at home doesn't want to necessarily invest in the kit yet, they just want to try out drying, would you recommend to do that? Use watercolor paper, cardboard, and books?
Yeah. So I like the watercolor paper because it's moisture absorbing. And so it just kind of works really well to like help dry out the flowers without molding. Okay. Because like the balance you want to have is you want to make sure it dries completely, but that it doesn't sit with like a condensed wet spot for so long that it molds, right? Mm-hmm. Or that it like discolors and turns brown. So I found that for me like that, and again, I did most of this through experimentation, that like having the watercolor paper, two sheets, then corrugated cardboard just saved from an Amazon box, doesn't have to be the exact shape. And then you can continue doing that in like sandwiches, even if you want, like if you have a lot of flowers you're pressing all at once, and then just a big old stack of your heaviest books. And then leave it for, I mean, some thin petals can dry, like pansies can dry in about like a week or so, a week to 10 days. But some of the bigger flowers, just like leave them for a solid month and then check on them, because sometimes even if you check on it a bit too early when there's still moisture, it could stick. So, you know, with the dahlias, if I don't tend to press dahlias or anything big like that slowly, just because with something like that, that there's so much moisture to get out of, it's really hard to press in the traditional way. For that, I just press the petals separately from those bigger flowers. And you can even then use the petals to like reconstruct the flower if you wanted to. But yeah, so those would be my drying system tips.
And what are you using dried flowers for when you dry them? And are you doing some like hanging drying or just the press mostly?
No, I also do, everlasting floral decor, and not wreaths so much as, I make something during the off season. I make both ornaments and something called Blumenrings, which is the German word for wreath that I found by stumbling through Pinterest and just looking at dried flower crafts. And you use dried flower stems, so not press, the hang dried flowers, and wrap a metal ring with twine, and you can just stick different flowers in there. And it actually, what's cool about it is you can very easily change them out. So like, you could have different flowers for each season of the year in this one little decoration.
I love that. That's awesome. Maybe we'll have to get some photos, especially of your dried art. I mean, there's one that just cracks me up. It's the red and Reginald one. Can you tell people what that is? And we'll post a photo on our Instagram.
Sure. Yeah. So I use the pressed flowers for art pieces. And those are just really like, kind of just customized pieces using flowers. And it's really just my creativity. Like, I don't promise folks what it'll be or anything like that. Sometimes I'll say, you know, I've had some orders for like specific seasonal pieces, like using spring flowers, like summer, winter, fall. But I made this one that was supposed to be a gift that was going to be from my friend to someone in her family that she wound up keeping. And she's like, she just wanted a pressed flower art piece. The reason I did it was I found that some of my, zinnia petals from last season, they pressed this like nut brown color. And at first I was like, what am I going to use these for? And then I looked at it and I looked at the shape of one of them and it just reminded me of a squirrel's tail. So I was like, yes, this is going to be a squirrel is what this is going to be. And so I made this little cute squirrel guy, and like, I lay them out first. You know, I use tweezers and kind of lay everything out first before I do any gluing. And it like turned out so cute. I was like, oh my goodness. So, and then I was like, but there needs to be something else. So, I have a dahlia that I grew from seed in 2020. That's, it looks kind of like an orchid type. It's open faced and it's red and yellow. And those petals press beautifully. They're so vibrant. And so I use that to make a little bird with kind of a crooked wing. And then I also had some pressed chiffon poppy that I used to be a little flower in the background. And then I was just looking at it when it was finished and I'm like, oh, that squirrel's name is Reginald. Like, you think I would figure out red first since it's bright red, but no, that squirrel, I was just like, you are Reginald. And then I'm like, the bird can be red. And I'm like, red and Reginald. And now I've saved like a bunch of those petals because I have other ideas for like an ongoing series that I want to do of the adventures of this like red bird and this like nut brown little.
Jess, I'm waiting for the children's book on this, like a whole series of these different two little animals and the adventures they go on. I can't wait.
Someday. I have so many projects lined up for when I transition to like art making this season. Like, I'm trying to work on one now where I'm pressing, like as the flowers bloom, I'm pressing a new one each week, at least some petals. And I'm trying to do like a piece that'll have a pressed flower for every week of the year.
Wow.
So that's kind of like my ongoing piece that I'm doing during the season, trying to do in the midst of growing and harvesting and subscriptions and bouquets and selling and Yeah, luckily I find it pretty zen to like to do the dried flower art. So it's something that's fun for me to do in the evenings. But yeah,
I can't wait to see what you come up with this season. And yeah, so let's just do a little bit of background. And you told us a little bit about how you got into growing flowers, but how did you get into selling your flowers?
Yeah, so really, as I was gardening, I loved it so much. I wanted to bring the flowers I was growing inside. And so, you know, at first I just brought in a vase of the cosmos, and then like, I kind of saw some things that they might look good with. And so towards the end of that year, it was actually Thanksgiving. I was at my mother-in-law's house. And like I said, she's an avid gardener, and she has a really well-established landscape with like a whole bunch of different really cool plants. And I brought a bunch of my cosmos, and I made a centerpiece, and then a couple either like little vase arrangements to have around the house for Thanksgiving. And I wanted to do it as a gift to her for introducing me really to gardening, to being the person that I could ask and like, you know, was my first kind of gardening buddy, really.
Yeah.
And she looked at them and she's like, "Jess, these are beautiful." She's like, "You're really good at this." And I'm like, "Am I?"
Sometimes it takes someone else telling you.
Yeah. And then kind of from there, the next season when I was growing more flowers, you know, and obviously had more material of my own to work with, I started doing it more, started putting more things in vases together. And kind of by the peak of that season, I was, you know, as a lot of people, I think, start, I was giving away arrangements to friends and family. And then I have one friend in particular who, she's a mom friend who, her son was in preschool with mine before the pandemic. And she insisted on paying me. She's like, "No," she's like, "Jess, what you do is beautiful and I'm going to pay you for it." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." And I found that, you know, that sentiment was echoed by others. And, like I've always been artistic. I've always been creative. Like I studied theater in undergrad, like a lot of performing based, but just nothing that I ever felt like I could do as my job. And suddenly I had this thing that people really valued enough to pay me for that was using my creativity. And I'm like, okay, I think I could try this. And then I think with the timing of the pandemic, it was so important for me, like the piece I got both from gardening and arranging and making art, like that was such kind of a balm for a really hard time. And also, you know, having a small child, like it's super rewarding, but it's also a lot. And so it was this retreat for me. And I'm like, and people are willing to pay me for it. Like that's a really cool, like validating thing to realize that like a creative project you're putting out into the world that like people really think it's valuable. So yeah.
Absolutely. It sounds like it brings together a lot. And I mean, I know this from just knowing you, but it sounds like it brings together a lot of your interests and yeah, a retreat. I think that's a good way to phrase it. And so how has your business changed since you started it?
Yeah. So I think it's changed more like how I'm selling things rather than what. Like I said, I started out to family and friends, and kind of as my business grew, I'm now selling more to neighbors who I didn't know before. And also businesses, which I found that I really love connecting with other entrepreneurs, other local business owners and creative entrepreneurs, folks I met at the markets, as well as just, you know, the people down at like Heritage Distilling who were kind enough to offer me like my first pop-up space. And so I've kind of shifted gears a little bit there, just naturally where like I'm building connections. But I, you know, I started doing upcycled mason jar arrangements because one, they were what I had, and two, like, it seems like being as sustainable as possible and reusing, say, bird netting from the garden as my grid and things like that, like just seems like a little way that I can help an ongoing global crisis that, you know, and it feels like if there's a small way you can make that impact, that that's something you should embrace. So I've stuck to that, but yeah, I think it's just kind of the focus of like how I want to sell things and like narrowing down who my audience is and like kind of what my work is for is kind of how it's evolved. And I tend to go with like where I feel the most joy and the least stress and where it feels less like selling and more like connecting.
And I love that you just, you know, you've formed these connections with neighbors and also with businesses. And if someone is listening to this and trying to sell their own flowers, could you tell us a little bit about how you approach those businesses that set up subscriptions with you?
Yeah, I gave the example before with my hair salon client, but a lot of it really has to do with like, I just go to the places that I go to and as like a community member,
yeah,
and that I support and enjoy, and usually that have some sort of connection to what my values are as a business owner, you know, around sustainability and doing good in your community, which I mean, I think we're really lucky here in Ballard that there are so many businesses that like approach their kind of business plans, their philosophies that way. And, you know, I either through, like I said, a lot of it has come through the Facebook group, other folks that were advertising, I connected to the Heritage Distilling Manager that way as well. Of like, hey, how can we help and support each other? They wanted to activate their former distillery space behind the bar and turn that into a pop-up space for local artisans. So kind of just paying attention to like, you know, the other businesses in your community and what are they doing and what are their values? And I feel like it's more like pursuing a beneficial relationship around those shared values than anything else. One tip I will say is I always show up to every business meeting with some sort of flowery prettiness.
Yes.
And, you know, if it's the winter, I'll have like a little dried flower arrangement or like, you know, my first little, I call them my minis. Like I do for like my hair salon or like for the tables at Heritage. Like I'll do these little apothecary bottle mini arrangements that have like one or two like stellar flowers and then like a little bit of airiness and foliage. And I'll bring that, or I'll bring like a little dried arrangement or, you know, an ornament or something like that. Just it's kind of like, hey, this is what I do. And thanks for meeting with me. Because I feel like what we do is so visual that it's nice for people to actually see it. But yeah, so I would say just kind of, I approach them pursuing a natural common ground and shared values and thinking through ahead of time how, you know, how we could help cross promote each other and things like that. And then bringing something pretty. Everybody likes something pretty.
It's like the cherry on top. That's really nice. And so the last thing is, where can listeners find you on the socials?
Yeah, so I am Curly Girl Gardens on Instagram and Facebook, and I have recently been experimenting with TikTok as well, mostly for funny little videos about what it's like being a gardener in florist. Like I documented my experience going through the deep freeze that we had in December, which as a zone like 8-9-ish gardener, you're like, what the F is this?
Where did this cold snap come from?
Like, and especially someone that's only been gardening for 2 years, I'm like, I don't do this. Like, this is not what I signed up for. Yeah, I think one thing I might want to document now is next is just how many dishes florists do.
I know, the buckets, the vases, the mason jars, whatever you're using.
Like, it is never ending. And I mean, and I have a small child. Like, dishes are endless in my life. And I'm like, it's the worst.
One thing I need to document, maybe not on TikTok because I'm not a TikToker, but every time I'm driving in my car delivering flowers, I drive super slow, but also Seattle people are just such horrible drivers. And we're both from the East Coast, so I know you feel me on totally. This. But one lady yesterday, she just stopped at a green light that was at the bottom of a hill. And I'm just like, had to slam on the brakes and just like trying to hold my flowers back. And so we need a TikTok about that too. Yes. It's driving with flowers is a whole other thing.
Can I just say though, how like grateful I am for your box idea of like just making the cut in the box for like your vases and mason jars, like mind blown. That has been so like life-changing. I want to show you too. I actually created something for my minis. Like,
That's perfect. And reusing stuff that you're getting in the mail. Absolutely. So that you have like a solid holder.
Yeah. And so, at one point I needed more apothecary bottles, so I did have to buy some, and it comes with this ridiculous styrofoam, which I hate throwing out anything like that. But I'm like, wait, I could just use it to hold the finished arrangements. So I put it in a box, and created some duct tape handles. And I've used that for over a year now. It's perfect for delivering those minis.
There you go. That's perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Jess. And we'll have to have you back to chat soon.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun. I mean, it's always fun talking to you. So.
Same here. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Well, as you can hear, I'm never not having fun when I'm hanging out with Jess, so I hope the laughter wasn't too much, and I hope you got a kick out of her dog, Pascal, chasing down a squirrel in the middle of that interview. For this week's flower fact, I'm actually going to use something that Jess mentioned at the end of her interview, which is about transporting flowers. Transporting flowers was one of the biggest headaches when I started selling flowers. I couldn't figure out how to safely get the flowers from my home to the destination without, you know, all the flowers tipping over if you slam on the brakes or you hit a pothole. It's just really hard because they're delicate and beautiful, and especially if you made a vase arrangement, you've, you know, very carefully selected the placement of each of the flowers, and it's such a shame to be driving with it and then have it topple over and stems break. You can't sell that arrangement anymore. And so I had that happen once where I had a really beautiful arrangement that I'd worked on for a while, and I was trying to carefully hold it next to me while I was driving, which is not the safest thing, and it did topple and a couple stems broke, so I had to bring it home, redo it. And it's hard when you set up a delivery window for people. You want to be able to deliver in that window, so you want to make sure your flowers are safely getting there. So the method that she mentioned was the box method, which is one I used to use quite a bit. I basically would just take an Amazon box or something that had come in the mail, maybe 3 to 6 inches deep. It depends on the vases that you're using. And I would take an X-Acto knife and measure the vase before I had flowers in it. It's a lot easier before you put the flowers in because they're very delicate. And so I would kind of prep this box ahead of time, use an X-Acto knife to cut out the exact width of the vase. If it was a circle, I'd cut a circle. If it was a square, I'd cut a square. You know, measure it to the vase that you have. And then you can drop the vase in, and the base of the vase is sitting in the base of the box while the top of the vase is held firmly by the shape that you've cut out of the cardboard. So it's just a really cheap, inexpensive way if you have, you know, you can reuse something that you already have and, you know, make it very customized to the specific vase that you're delivering. I pretty much only use that if I'm doing event arrangements now, because when I deliver vase arrangements to my customers, I have boxes that I've ordered now. They're compostable. I try to always have packaging be reusable or compostable. And I basically use open face boxes now where I pack the vase in and I pack paper around it so that it's very sturdy. And then when I deliver it to the customer, it looks professional because it has my little logo sticker on it, and it has paper coming out that supports the arrangement and makes it look really pretty. So I like that method for individual arrangements, but if you're, you know, bringing multiple arrangements to an event, that X-Acto knife box method is really helpful. Or sometimes what I'll do is I'll pack arrangements in individual boxes and then I'll put them in a larger box for better traction and just to help support the sides. So there's lots of ways to do it. I would love to hear people. There's some florists that I follow that have like different hashtags or things that they use about transporting flowers. And I always get a kick out of like how much you can try to fit in your car or in a small space and then how you get your like beautiful arrangements and flowers there safely. And that's something I talked about a little bit with Paula Pritchard on last week's episode. And then I've seen a lot of people posting on Instagram lately. I'm not sure why, but asking for podcast requests. And of course, I have to be like, go listen to Flower Friends. It's the best. But I think maybe because it's that time of year when there's so many buckets to wash, there's so much to clean, there's a lot of gardening to do outside. And so I think people are just in the mood to pop a podcast in and just let the afternoon ride. So I wanted to just recommend a few of my faves. If you're in the mood for flower-related content, I love No-Till Flowers with Jenny Love. It's part of the larger No-Till Growers Network. They have a separate podcast that's more for vegetable growing and other types of growing, but this one's specific to flowers, and there's a lot of information on regenerative farming and healthy soil. You know, a lot of it is geared towards larger scale farming than what I'm doing, but I just love some of the topics that are really applicable to small scale growers. And then there's a podcast that I love from the UK. It's called Let's Grow Girls. It's with Nicole and Sarah, and they talk a little bit about their own gardens, but mostly are interviewing growers in the UK. And then some from the US. I think they've had a few from Australia. So it's been really cool to hear some of the growers on there. They pick like a different flower or topic for each episode and kind of try to stick to that throughout. But they also make a lot of like flower recommendation lists. And so that's a very dangerous podcast to listen to. A local grower, Marin from the Farmhouse Flower Farm, has been on that podcast several times. I love her. I've taken a couple classes of hers, and they called her like the chief enabler, or the CEO of enabling, of like recommending different flower varieties and blowing your whole salary on them. So that's a really cute one. And I've mentioned this one before, but Dish the Dirt podcast is an Australian host. Her name's Rebecca. Can you tell I love an accent on my podcast? And she interviews different Australian growers about, you know, what they grow, where they sell their flowers, how they got connected with different florists to sell their flowers to. And so I really love that one. And then another one that I've mentioned on here before, because we interviewed Hillary Dahl from Seattle Urban Farm Co., is her podcast, Encyclopedia Botanica. And that one's not focused on flowers, but she has several episodes that she does talk about her favorite flowers to grow. And so I highly recommend that, because she covers a lot of topics, whether you grow veggies or flowers, that are super interesting. And yeah, I just love Seattle Urban Farm Co. Then on the non-flower front, I am a little bit of a reality TV head. That's how I get through my winters. And so my favorite podcast of all time is Bitch Sesh with Danielle Schneider and Casey Rose Wilson. They're two comedians. My husband got me really into that podcast a long time ago because he loves both of those women. And they just talk about the Real Housewives. They joke that they're Real Housewives historians, and I think that I am as well. So if you're into the artwork of our era, the Real Housewives, it's a piece of art. It's a great podcast where they break it down. I also, related to reality TV, love Juliette Littman on the Ringer Network, and she has a podcast called Bachelor Party about The Bachelor, but she also does some reality TV podcast related topics on the Ringer Dish. So I recommend those. And then I love Higher Learning with Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay. Rachel was a Bachelorette contestant that talked about Chris Harrison, and that's when he got kicked off The Bachelor, which is great. He made some really racist, horrible comments. And so I love Rachel Lindsay and her co-host Van Lathan. And then probably one of my other favorite podcasts of all time is Ologies with Ali Ward. I found that last year or the year before, and I'm still working my way through it, but I started all the way back from the very first episode, and I'm working my way forward, and I've made it through so many. I think I've made it through 2 years worth of podcasts. I just love her. She takes all these super interesting topics, science-related topics, and she interviews an expert and breaks it down and asks all the funny questions that you want to ask and you're too embarrassed to. And they just have these super entertaining convos about, you know, science topics so you can learn something too, but it's like funny. I love Table Manners with Jessie and Lenny Ware. It's such a funny mom-daughter duo, and they make a meal for their guest and then sit around and eat it together and talk about favorite meals, last meals, etc. And then almost every day I listen to the Daily Podcast, New York Times, just really good. Like, they pick a news topic and they break it down for 20, 30 minutes. And then at the end, they have like a shortened version of like, here's what else you need to know today by Michael Barbaro. So I guess you could say my podcast tastes come down to news, reality TV, flowers, and then a few science-y related ones. So that's where I'm at right now, and I would love any other hot recommendations that you might have for good podcasts, because I'm at that point of the season when I'm really burning through them. So you can head over to the Flower Friends podcast Instagram. It's just at Flower Friends, and drop any podcast recommendations you have into the Jess Wesley episode post that will be up there, and I might make an Instagram story about it as well, so you can drop suggestions there. And I just want to say thank you so much for listening to this podcast, Flower Friends. It's my little baby. It's a really fun project to work on, a great excuse to talk to other growers and florists, floral designers, people in the flower industry, about the things that they're doing, the projects that they're working on, things that make them excited, how they got to where they are. I love hearing from everyone, and it's been so much fun to make so far. I'm just doing it for free. I'm just doing it without ads or anything, as an interesting project and something that's fun to make for me, but it does take a lot of time. So it means a lot when I hear back from you guys, if you're liking it. And the best thing you can do to support the podcast is to go to whichever app that you're listening to it on and to rate it or review it by leaving a comment, and then subscribe to the podcast. All right. Thanks again for listening. And until the next episode, have a great week. The song today is such a good one. It's Hard Place by her. Please go listen to the real version, which is 8,000 times better, but I'll sing you out. And if I had to choose my heart or you, I'm gonna lose.